Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Mike Leibold. Mike is a distinguished fellow and senior researcher at the Institute for the Future, exploring future technology systems, working with clients, global leaders, researchers, and public groups. Mike's a pioneer and veteran with decades of experience as a senior researcher for iconic companies like Atari, Apple, Netscape, and Intel. He's a friend and a colleague at IFTF, and I'm really excited to have him because we always have great discussions at IFTF. How are you, Mike?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike, it's really great to reconnect with you. We also have gone back a long way, Whole Earth days and before. So I'm really interested to hear what your favorite tools are.
Great. Over the years, I actually keep a mental note of things to contribute to the Cool Tools website, and I'm always a little slow, so I'm really thrilled to catch up on a few.
All righty.
And so, Mike, one of the things I noticed that you have an iPad mini, and I've seen you using various like media collection tools to stay on top of tech trends. And so that was one thing I wanted you to talk about. Tell me about your latest setup that you're using with your advanced search tools.
Well, for a long time, my favorite setup was an app called Flipboard that dynamically created a personal magazine. But they ran into a real financial problem with the bottom line and started spamming way too many ads. So I've reverted back to Twitter's TweetDeck. But all of these search tools really kind of rely on a fundamental understanding of some really basic search tools. And you get more out of Google, get more out of Twitter, get more out of streaming social media information if you understand a bit about the operators of these services. And so I've always paid really close attention to the many advanced Google tools for Google searches to help curate my information.
What's an example of one of them in Google? What's a little trick that you do with Google? Do you have alerts? Do you have alerts set up?
I have for many years, but I don't anymore because Google News is not the place for me to aggregate information anymore. Twitter's where I aggregate information. But my tools for Google search are the minus sign for a term that I really don't want. If I'm looking, there's a lot of ambiguous phrases that are common in many, many domains. And if you want to filter out, you say chemistry when you're talking about molecular engineering, then you'd get information about molecular engineering minus a lot of the other kind of chemical information that might just have a little embedded section. The other thing is I use
the minus thing, I'm not sure. How are you using the minus? Explain that minus.
It excludes terms.
So you have chemistry minus nano or something like that?
No, I would have nano minus chemistry. If I wanted to talk about nano engineering and without the chemical references, the minus, I would take the chemistry references out of the search.
Or another example would be banana minus slug. If you're just interested in bananas,
right,
but not banana slugs.
Right. And so exactly. How do you do the same with Twitter? So and what do you search Twitter for? What's an example of one of your setups? A term
or TweetDeck, actually.
Well, it's a different set of search tools for Twitter, but the main thing I do is I curate lists of experts. When I find it like a scientist or academic, I look for who they're following. And one of my great tricks is people don't realize that you can add people to a list without following them. And if you view a list, you get all of the tweets from that person. So I follow networks of scientists, networks of authors, networks in many different domains. So so that is one of the key tricks. I keep many channels on TweetDeck for different lists. And so I have curated streams.
And so those streams are not cluttering up your mainstream, because you have to kind of go to them specifically if you want to see nanotechnology, your list, and you'll see all the tweets in that stream, but it's not ordinarily filling up your day-to-day stream.
It is, and I don't use the day-to-day stream for anything. It's just jumbled, because the way I use Twitter is segregated into at any time 15 or 20 topical channels, and they autofill. And so I don't use Twitter as a social medium. I use other media as a social media. So Twitter is just it's an information engine for me. As an advanced researcher, futures researcher, I'm able to stay up with advanced developments in any domain at my fingertips. It's autofills. I used a tool called RSS before that, and that was originally invented by a colleague at Netscape, Guha. And before that, I had autofill streams on old services in the old days called Dialog, and another earlier one from Systems Development Corporation called Orbit, where I would have topical auto notices of every subject I was interested in.
Okay, so that's your research tool. What tell us about another tool that you're really excited by, you use every day, I guess.
Sure, you know, I've got two lives. I go down to Palo Alto and I work on high technology analysis, and I get back up here on the mountain on the coast side, and I've got 8 acres of pasture and redwoods and oak and pine trees, and it is an incredible task removing biomass and keeping a fire safe zone and everything else around here. So all my free time is spent actually outdoors, and I use the lowest end Toyota four-wheel drive truck you can get, the SR pickup truck. It's four cylinders, and it doesn't have any of the elegant packages. And it is, in fact, built on the identical platform of a truck I reviewed in Cool Tools many years ago, a 1994 Toyota base model 4x4 that got 240,000 miles on it. And this is the replacement. And so I drive it like a tractor. I throw stuff in it, and I still can get on the freeway, and it's comfortable. It's got a nice, much better sound system and more comfortable seats than the other one. And plus, I calculated the cost of this truck compared to the truck I bought in 94 for $19,000. And this one's 24, but at the rate of inflation, this is about 30% cheaper than the truck I bought back in 1994. So if you really are going to be doing rugged work outside, I think probably a lot of people who live out there are probably already know about these Tacoma trucks.
And this new model, besides the better sound system, is it at all improved from the, would someone do better looking for a 1990s, mid 99 model as used, or are you doing better with getting a new one?
I have on occasion bought used cars, but I don't think I'd ever buy a used car with more than 30,000 miles on it. Unless you know the owner personally, you just don't know how it's treated. So that's my guideline. And my take is that people who have these drive them forever. And so I'm always a little suspicious about a used vehicle. So I drove mine for 24 years. Yeah.
Right. So tell us about, since you're hauling a lot of biomass and stuff, tell us about some of your biomass tools, particularly like in firewood and other biomass that you deal with.
Yeah. There's a lot of brush and pine branches. I'm lucky that I get a lot of windfall firewood. We're up on a ridge, and we get these great southern 40-mile-an-hour gusts every time there's a storm. So I just go out and buck up Madrone or oak and throw it in the truck. And so I really enjoy splitting firewood myself rather than a mechanical splitter, which is just too easy. And plus, the wedge will just neatly split the wood into four pieces. It's magical. Okay. And very satisfying. And for the tough one, then I'll get an 8-pound sledge and really split it.
Right. So that's the splitting wedge, and then you have the splitting mauls. You have two different mauls you want to suggest?
Oh yeah, a 3-pound maul is just like a heavy hammer, and it's pretty easy to work with, and it's not the kind of giant sledge you have to lift way over your head and hammer it. It is more like a carpentry hammer, a little bit heavier. And it's very easy to use with a good wedge for softwoods like pine for kindling, or for heavier woods with a really good wedge that are still green enough to split well. And then I use an 8-pound maul, which is a sledgehammer on one side and the splitting wedge on the other side for wood that's harder to split, seasoned. Madron is a little harder to split, and eucalyptus is incredibly difficult. I've given up on euc, but you do sometimes. You can't just apply enough pressure with a 3-pound maul, so I'll drop the heavy hammer on it. Very satisfying. I sit out there with a beer, and I put on KPEG on the radio and split wood. It's kind of my comfort zone out there on a beautiful day.
And do you heat with wood, or is it just sort of more, I wouldn't call it ritual heating, fire, but are you actually heating your house with wood?
Well, the power goes out here almost every week because of where we are up in the ridge at the very, very end of the grid. So when the power goes out, we just close off the fireplace room, which is right adjacent to the kitchen. And yeah, I'll heat with firewood every time the power goes out. We have a generator going to fire the stove and the microwave and power computers and cell phones and things like that. But otherwise we just use it for just nice evenings around playing cards or reading books or listening to the stereo or something.
You mentioned that while you're splitting, you have a pair of safety glasses that you use?
Yeah. Still, the chainsaw brand actually sells very cheap safety glasses, but they're styled like really cool Ray-Ban glasses. They're super cheap. They sell for between $11 and $19 at your local hardware store. And they're really good safety glasses, and they're comfortable and replaceable if they get lost or damaged working outdoors all the time. And they're great for general use as sunglasses too. I buy two or three at a time in case I lose them, or I can leave one in the car and one in the house and one in the garage.
Okay, that's cool. Just yeah. So your eyes are always safe.
Yeah.
And do they fit over? Do they fit over prescription glasses?
No. Unfortunately, these are rather you know, these are tight fitting kind of wraparound. Dark glasses. I do have some of the bigger goggles that I use sometimes, but I used to use those all the time when I was out running weed whacker and cutting weeds or mowing, and they just get so filthy and bulky, and the straps and it never seem to work right. So I've gone for the wraparounds, but no, I don't wear any regular optical glasses. So these fit neatly around right around my face.
All right. Okay. And tell us about another tool that you probably carry in your while you're out there doing your work in the outback in the yard. This is the well, skull tool.
Yeah, you know, I think I joked with Mark at one time that I think I'm a maker, but I never have time to make things because I'm always just fixing things. So I'm a fixer.
So you're a fixer, not a maker.
Honestly, I've got note cards of dozens of really cool creative projects that I haven't gotten to yet because I have to fix something. So I keep a Leatherman skeletal tool clipped on the belt loop of my Levi's. It is the lightest utility tool I've ever owned. It is the bare minimum. It's needle nose pliers, wire clippers, two heads of screwdrivers, and a cutting knife. All on a simple carabiner that snaps on your jeans and will also open a beer bottle for you. So it's It's way easier and lighter and less bulky than these kind of Swiss Army knife tools that got 55 different capabilities you never use. So no question, I've had three of these over the years, and this is one. It's 5 ounces and just the right combination of tools for everything I'm doing.
Like, what are some of the common uses that you find yourself pulling it out for?
I use the needle nose for retrieving lost hardware that falls down. You know, if you've got a washer or something that falls down somewhere. I use the knife all the time as just a utility knife for everything, for cutting strings on the string cutter, or I can't imagine all of the uses for a utility knife. I'm always using it for something. You're making a slight mark on a PVC pipe where I'm going to cut it. And the screwdrivers, you know, there's both a flat-headed bit and a Phillips bit. Unfortunately, they don't have all the exotic Torx bits. I think there is an attachment I can get that I can carry all those fancy bits, but it seems to work for just about everything, repairing anything around the house, taking a light fixture apart, or any kind of mechanical work, repairing a tool, putting together a toy kit for the grandchildren.
Wow.
All of the above.
Okay. Sounds really great. And I know that, You're a huge book fan, and you rightly think of books as tools as well. And you have a nice library. So what's a handy tool that or book that might work as a way of opening up possibilities for somebody? What's a book that you would like to suggest?
One is a plug for cool tools.
Okay,
I had a very good friend who was trying to reconsider his life, very bright friend. And I told him that all the Whole Earth catalogs had a transformational effect on my life. And I handed him, I think, the last Whole Earth catalog and a new version of the big one, the next Whole Earth catalog, Cool Tools. And I said, this is not about the gadgets. It's about the mindset. So clearly that's my go-to. But lately I've been attempting to kind of do an attitude adjustment of thinking about the Middle East. I'm fascinated with ancient history, and I read lots of books about the Silk Road and Central Asia. But recently I've been trying to understand more deeply the Islamic cultures, and most recently Andalusia in southern Spain, which up until 1492 was a caliphate. And it was a time of incredible harmony among Muslims, Jews, and Christians. And it was a time of cultural blossoming, really before the Renaissance. And so there's a book I recommend called Granada, A Pomegranate in the Hand of God, the story of Al-Andalus and the Convivencia. It's really astounding. I kind of used the book as a guide and toured the Arabic and the medieval Islamic Andalusia last year with my wife, and it was just a stunning eye opener to see Europe from a totally different perspective. And then, Timothy McIntosh Smith is one of my all-time favorite authors. I've read many of his books, but Travels with the Tangerine is one of his most astounding books. He followed the footsteps of Ibn Battuta, who was a erudite journalist and author working for the Sultan of the Maghreb in Morocco, and I think Al-Andalus as well. And he traveled all across northern Africa, into the Middle East, up into the Black Sea, all the way down the Arabic Peninsula, across the Indian Ocean, into India and China, and wrote journals all the way. And so Timothy McIntosh Smith wrote a series of books following the footsteps of Ibn Battuta. And it's really incredible. The first one is called Travels of Tangerine, that takes you across North Africa, Egypt, and into the Black Sea. And then some of his later books follow Ibn Battuta into India and China.
So, Mike, I have a question. These are like books that I've never heard of. What's your book discovery method?
I read the New York Review of Books every, you know, I get that in the mail. I love to read all the universities announce their new books. Mm-hmm. And so there's stuff that never shows up in a bookstore for nonfiction and academic writing. And then I've got an amazing Twitter feed. I follow every major publisher's journal and all the major book reviews, New Yorker, New York Review, the London Review of Books, they all tweet. And so I just have a literary Twitter stream that I can scan any time to kind of follow what new titles do I want to read. Cool.
So that's like a tweet deck. That's a tweet deck column is publishers.
Channel. Yeah. It's just a channel. It's a literary channel. And so I tune it for the reviewers that seem to have match my taste.
That's really cool, Mike.
One of the last ones I'd really like to recommend because it's vanishing fast, and I know Kevin's interested in vanishing Asia. There are about a dozen vanishing religions in the Mideast that are just fascinating. And a guy named Jared Russell has written a book about the heirs to the forgotten kingdoms, about all of the tribes that are on their last stands across the Middle East. It's beautiful. We saw the crisis with the Yazidis during the ISIS and Syrian wars. And, you know, this book was written just before then. There's a lovely chapter in there about the Yazidis and all the other obscure cultures of the Mideast.
I'm sorry, would this include religions like the Druids and others that are kind of minority religions, the Ishmaelites and stuff like that?
Yes. It's a review of all of these obscure sects. And by the way, Mackintosh Smith talks about Ibn Battuta talking about seeing icons of the Prophet Muhammad in Christian churches in the Black Sea, and that he also mentioned that icons of Jesus and Mary are in the Kabbalah or the Kaaba, which is what's the black cube in Mecca?
Right, in Mecca.
Yeah. It, inside the holy shrine, there are icons of Jesus and Mary in there. So the summation of all of these books is really what an ecumenical world exists in various times in history, you know, where people got along well.
Well, these are fantastic, Mike. They're really great. You're going from kind of your sit behind a desk and read books to clearing the lower 40, fantastic range of tools. We want to talk about what you're kind of interested in these days. What's the project that you're working on that you want to tell people about?
Three things that people might be interested in, and you know, one certainly overlaps with your own work, Kevin, on the future of digital technologies. But I've got some private interests. I've been very active with the Mid Peninsula Regional Open Space. It's a group that manages 64,000 acres of open space of wild forests on the San Francisco Peninsula, and over 5 years. I've been trying to get them to appoint a chief scientist and have an independent scientific mission to create baseline inventory and survey of the habitats and species to build policy on. And after 5 years of medical negotiation, just this week, they just approved a whole scientific program to build a baseline understanding of the habitats and species in all the open space property. So it's a quiet personal victory I'm celebrating. I didn't do this with any group. I just worked privately with them for 5 years, trying to encourage them to appoint a scientific advisory board and to set policy. And they finally did it. So that's one thing.
Right. And if you are in the Bay Area, this is a wonderful group, the Open Public Lands to support in terms of trying to preserve them, and also, you know, like the Bay Ridge Trail, trying to make trails to access some of these places. So it's a great thing to support if you have any interest in it in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and the most fascinating thing is something that I got into it with them originally, trying to explore what really is going on with pesticides. And I started understanding sort of the molecular chemistry of the root systems that things like Roundup work on. And I found that groups who were sampling whole microbiome habitats, so they do something called environmental DNA, and they sample the health of all the microorganisms in the in a soil sample. And so that came from trying to understand pesticides. And since then, so I recommended that they use techniques like environmental DNA, and they're already doing it at a research laboratory over here near Stanford called Jasper Ridge. Is that if you sample a cubic volume of soil, you can get inventory of all the species, not just the microorganisms, but raccoons, mice, bobcats, mountain lions, birds. There's genetic materials for all of them. So it's an exciting new way to monitor and inventory the habitat, the health of a habitat. And it implies there's a possible future for citizen science where people can actually go out and help an institution like a massive forest preserve take samples and better understand the ecologies of all the different microbiomes.
Well, thanks, Mike. We really appreciate your joining us this morning. It's been a long time. I've wanted to have you on for a long time, and we finally got around to doing it. So good luck keeping that part up on the ridge, safe for fire, because it is a huge concern. And it's a lot of work, I understand.
Yeah, I'm still here. Mike, I just wanted to also say thank you so much. It's great. You're always full of surprises every time I talk to you at Institute for the Future and on this call as well. And your book recommendations were particularly interesting to me. I'm going to check some of those out. So thanks so much, Mike. Hey, everybody. It's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools Show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools, that's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.